Let's talk about the NASA Recon Project.
Okay.
This is, I have 69 that the NASA Recon Project began.
69? Oh, no.
No?
61.
Well, you were doing I must be confusing then what you call the first part of the, so you called...
Well, let me explain, okay. I know there are third generation computers coming. So at the time we started the facility, I was only thinking in terms of the 1401 or maybe the 1410 that we'd come after with that. So, but I knew the long range, I was going to have much more powerful computers. Okay, I knew that as a byproduct, I was going to have a tape. Okay, and I knew that there was going to be a need for us to search those tapes. I knew I wanted to set up a couple of thousand SDI profiles. I could provide a service to my centers. I mean, they could send me 25 or 30 apiece, and I would keep them, and I'd give them a printout every week, updated printout every week, and we could do whatever they... So I knew we were going to be able to do that. Okay. But by the same token, I also recognized that in terms of the new the systems that were coming along, that there were limitations on computer searches in terms of batch searching, and the big limitation being that the user himself generally did not interact with a database. Maybe a librarian or your librarian would help you, and you would make out a question. And you get out to the computer room, and if you were lucky, maybe they would batch that up, and maybe you'd get an answer in a day or a week or maybe even 2 weeks.
Now, could you do this batch just from your facility?
I know we're going to have to do that.
Okay.
We weren't doing any searching.
Okay.
In those days.
You were just producing STAR.
That's right. In any business, you look further ahead than next week, and based on what was being written and generally what the way that the field was moving, whatever, I knew we were going to have this capability. We replaced the 1401 with a 1410, and then went to a 360/40. Now, the 360/40 gave us the capacity to batch search. Batch search was a big improvement in many ways, because you could run a whole bunch at one time. But there were limitations on batch searching. One, that the user himself did not interact with the database. As a result, oftentimes the question that went out had to be modified when it came back, and then you had to get at the end of the queue again. And it wasn't very good. I, in my twisted way, recognized that sooner or later we were going to have some kind of an interactive system. Or either a librarian interacted with it, but somebody's going to interact with this database and modify the questions and get an answer back essentially instantaneously. Well, not instantly, maybe 3 seconds, 4 seconds, 5 seconds, whatever it is, but you get an answer back right now.
Well, now, did you go to the batch-oriented search system, and how long did that last?
We did batches until 1965 or 66.
Do you remember when you started them?
When we got to 360/40, I don't know what year it was.
But someplace probably in 62 or 63.
Yeah, whenever the first ones, when the first ones became available, we got one. We didn't buy a new one. We were able to pick one up because NASA was getting rid of... See, this is the advantage of working at NASA.
Yeah.
I mean, they had so damn many computers that they were always wanting to upgrade, and then you could pick up one someplace. So I didn't have to go through this 3-year cycle to get those first ones. And I was working with a contractor.
Right.
I played both sides. I'd get the contractor to get the government rates, but he wouldn't have to go through the red tape to get the approvals, what have you, and so forth. See, so... he'd go ahead and buy, and I'd say we're going to buy for this government agency, so I get the government rates. So we saved a lot of money that way.
Yeah.
So I recognize we're going to have an online system, right? And I looked around. I talked with Mortaub quite often about, you know, we got to do something about an online. He says, let me develop an online system for you. I said, Mort, you got to make up your mind. Do you want to do an R&D job or do you want to do an operational job? Mm-hmm. I mean, the same thing I told you before. You can't do both. Okay, one or the other. Just make a choice. Because you try to do both, you're not going to do either one of them very well. Mm-hmm. Because you're compromising back and forth all the time. And, well, he really wanted to do the operation, but he also wanted to do the other thing. I said, okay, you answer my question. So, I let it be known in the field. I try to find out who was doing work in this particular area. And I let it be known in the field that I was interested in an online system. And Roger Summit was working for Lockheed at the time. He was running an R&D program trying to develop essentially an interactive capability. And NASA had the largest single database at that particular point in time, largest single bibliographic database at that time in existence. We had 200,000, when I started talking to them, we had 200,000 documents essentially in the database. It's a big database. And he came to me and he wanted to do the job. And I said, and I remember saying this to Roger, Roger will tell you this. I said, Roger, everybody that comes to me says they can do the job. Okay? Now, I'm only interested in people that can, that I know can do the job on the size of the database that we have. So he made an offer. He said, if you'll give me a copy of your database, because it's going to take a while, with 200,000, he said, I will demonstrate that I can do this job for you. Okay? And it'll cost about $18,000. Now, in government procurement at that time, you could, if the procurement was less than $25,000, you could make a case for sole source. I could make a case for sole source. Very many people out there could do what I wanted. So I gave him a copy of the database. And he took the thing back and he set it up and it did what it did. There's just no question about it. It did exactly what he said it could do. And then I issued an RFP and said, this is what I want done. And anybody wants can.
Now, how did you know Summit?
I found out what was going on in the field. My job was to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. But had you met him at ADI or ACES meetings?
I may have met him, but I don't recall. I just don't recall at this stage how I met him. Yeah. He and I had been friends for a long, long time. But I just don't recall how I met him. He was a young Turk, a lot younger than me in those days, still is. A young Turk working for an aircraft company, trying to sell me an R&D project that he hoped would convince his company to keep him on.
Did Lockheed already have any experience in doing any kind of online work?
Oh, I think they did some online work, but it was limited. It was only with small databases.
Uh-huh.
Huh. This was a large database,
yeah.
And I was only interested in large databases.
They had done the programming already to do this kind of thing.
They had done, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But they would have to make certain modifications. But we were adding about, I'd say, 50 to 60,000 items a year. That's the rate in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Not all reports. That would include published literature, too. Because remember, we're getting from IIA.
Mm-hmm.
From IAA.
Mm-hmm.
He demonstrated he could do it. I said, okay. Then I put out that recon RFP, and then we went up 1966, we were online across the country. And I tied together this will be of interest to you. We tied together all of the NASA centers and headquarters where I had my computers. It was a jury-rigged system. It was like Christmas lights on one street. And we essentially leased the line and we connected them all together. It was not publicly available. It was only available to NASA centers. But it is essentially, politically, it was very advantageous to us because it enabled any of the centers to have exactly the same access as any other centers, and essentially, and to provide essentially instantaneous access.
So by 66, you had this we set up between all the centers.
Between all the centers. And we were, and we operated that system. Until I left NASA. And it wasn't until I went to work at the National Library of Medicine that there was another major change. Okay? You understand that it wasn't until 1971, 1972, until the economic viability of online systems as a commercial enterprise showed itself to be, showed it was viable. And the big reason was the communication item. At the National Library of Medicine, they had contracted with SDC. And and they had a system built for them which was called MedLAS. Spent a lot more than I spent for it. Mine cost me about $237,000.
That's what the contract was with Lockheed originally to get it all set up.
$237,000, and I gave it to seven other agencies. Roger and I are good friends to this day, but he was angry with me at the time. He said, "You can't do that." He said, "You ought to let me sell it to him." I said, "Roger, I work for the government. My job is to get the best deal possible for the taxpayer. Now you check your contract." In that contract, I specifically put in that I could give that to other agencies. He missed it.
So you anticipated this and wrote it into the original contract,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
This was for the software and manuals, or what? What all was included there?
Well, it was my software. I just gave them copies of everything that I had.
Uh-huh.
It's our property. We can do anything we want.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I did was I said, "Now, look, these people don't know the first damn thing about running an online system. Okay? I said, I'm going to give them the software. You go up, get a contract with them to set the thing up and bing, 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 make improvements, modify, do whatever you have to do." Okay? So he was happy with that.
So 200 and something thousand.
237,000.
237,000. And that's their software development, getting it set up in your centers?
Yep.
No,
it's in one center.
In one center.
And it was at our facility.
Okay.
Put it out at the facility.
And now this is the initial programming work and everything that
right.
later becomes Dialogue.
Well, it became Dialogue. This is no question about it.
Yeah.
And which was good because the Air Force had supported the development of what we latched onto. And there's no reason in the world why everybody else shouldn't be able to latch onto that. But we paid for at the National Library of Medicine. We had a problem. We had to make a database publicly available. That was a different challenge we had at NASA. We didn't have to worry about the public at NASA at that particular point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll tell you how we took care of that in this few minutes. But what we did at the National Library of Medicine, we had this problem. If I lived in Bethesda, Maryland, I could make a local call and I could tap into MedLAS or Medline. I could type into Medline.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If I lived in Alaska, I pay the same taxes. I'd have to pay a long distance call. So we recognized that politically we couldn't have different prices for different different taxpayers depending upon where they live. That was just not going to last very. That wasn't going to go over very big. I mean, we'd have all kinds of political pressure. So we said we have to find a way of everybody paying the same. Well, there weren't any networks in those except AT&T, and AT&T wanted to charge for each phone call. But we did find out that there was a computer time-sharing corporation called Timeshare. They had a computer in Chicago, and one on the West Coast, and one on the East Coast. They tied together these computers. They had FCC, Federal Communications Commission, to tie them together into a network. Mm,
this is TimeNet.
Not TimeNet. TimeNet did not exist then.
Okay.
There was no communication system. Take my word for it. I mean, they could lease lines. Mm. And you can set up a private one, like I suppose the military set up private ones. But there was no publicly available. And so we convinced the timeshare corporation to put our computer into their network. And it worked out beautifully for us.
This is at MedLars.
At the National Library of Medicine. And the timeshare corporation recognized immediately that this was another way for revenue. Okay? So they set up the TimeNet Corporation.
Okay.
Now that the TimeNet Corporation became available, now this was what Roger Summit and our good friend at SDC.
I don't know who you're talking about. Hayes, Robert Hayes.
No. Robert was at the University of UCLA. It's
not Carlos Quadra.
Carlos.
Oh, okay.
Carlos Quadra. I'm getting a little ahead, let me give you this whole story here. Carlos Quadra had got about $2 million to set up the Medlines system, and he set up the online system.
Mm-hmm.
And this then meant that they could essentially give reduced rates and the same for everybody in terms of communication costs. So the cost would be communication cost plus access to the database, and depending upon how they wanted to set up, usually it's the amount of time that you use in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the big push for the commercial application. Because this made it possible, essentially, for no matter where you were, it was going to be the same charge. This mm-hmm. was a level playing field.
Okay. Let's come back to the NLM story and Medlars and Medline. How did you do it with the NASA online searching?
Online system, we were using a lease line.
You were using
when I left. Because we didn't have anything else.
Okay.
There was no other way. I mean, all I could do is I could spin off each center and say, okay, now your guys can search, but they're going to have to pay a long-distance call. And that's
so you lease the lines from each center to...
We tied them all in one lease line.
Oh, you did. Through your headquarters here in Washington?
Yep.
Uh-huh. And where was the
action? And they could... And that line was big enough in terms of the number of calls it could handle. Mm-hmm. It could handle other work for NASA too, so it worked out well.
Where was the actual computer located that these searches were being done on?
Out at the facility
in Lockheed.
No. We did our own searching.
Oh, you did. Okay.
No. But now we had another problem. You're our user. You're our taxpayer. You get on the system, and you can't get on because it's too busy, like AOL. Or the system's down. Well, you know, a couple of times of that, you say the system ain't no damn good.
Mm-hmm.
This is what happens, okay? So we recognize we got to do something about this. We need backup. Well, I'll tell you a private story. Well, I won't tell anybody else. I went to Collins. I said, Collins, why don't you give us an unsolicited proposal? You have our program. You've worked our database on your computer. They had to take it out there to model it.
Mm-hmm. Now this is back to NLM.
No, uh-huh. this was back at this. I'm at NLM, but Carlos was out at SDC.
Uh-huh. Right.
Okay, and that's where he developed, and that's where he ran the big system. I said, why don't you propose that you become backup for us, in return for which we would give you access to our database, which you could sell commercially. And if anybody else wants to do the same thing, that's fine too with us. Yeah. Whatever I do, I got to do with somebody else if anybody else wants it.
Okay. Sorry, gentlemen.
And Carlos, well, he didn't want to get into that. I don't know. SDC was kind of a funny place to work anyway. So he wasn't interested. So we then had a problem. If we go out and advertise, it's going to take us several months before we can get this backup. We need backup right away. I found out that SUNY up in New York had extra capacity, and they had a number of universities that they were providing service to, primarily in the biological information area, health information area. And so so we talked to them about there being the backup. The advantage of talking to them is it's a not-for-profit, it's an academic organization, they're already in the business. Mm-hmm. I don't have to compete. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. And it was just a backup. If our thing went wrong, it would automatically flip over to them. Mm-hmm. So most of the time, there was no problem. If we get overloaded, it would flip to them. Mm-hmm. And if the usage got to be a problem, well, then we would pay. What have you.
Okay. Again, all this is Medlar's Medline that you're talking about with SDC, right? Okay.
So that's how we got the backup. Uh-huh. And that's why, as far as the user was concerned, it was up, the system was always up.
Before we leave NASA, you have the system working through your computer here in Washington, doing the online searches. That Lockheed had worked out.
Yeah, but the online searches, remember, we weren't taking public requests. The online searching was strictly for NASA centers.
Right, okay. And was Dialog out of the picture at that point, or did they, they had done the software and all those kinds of things?
Carlos was now interested in building a commercial business. And what he wanted to do was to get as many databases as he could up, and he would provide service. Rather than being a developer of software, he wanted to become a provider of services.
Wait, that's SDC?
No.
Lockheed?
That's Lockheed. Okay. SDC did the same. SDC was doing both.
Doing the same thing, right.
Yeah, doing the same thing.
Well, I'm just trying to track the story of from the time Lockheed did the work for you and when they started Dialog, using the same software, right?
Oh, I think that they probably started Dialog pretty close around the same time, but they were having a hell of a time selling it. Mm-hmm. It was not, they weren't making any money. And
but it was all the same software that had been developed.
Basically the same software. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe they had to make some modifications. Mm-hmm. Okay, in those days there's always some modification.
How many agencies actually took this software and that Lockheed had developed for you began to use
it? We gave copies to Atomic Energy Commission, mm-hmm. to us now Department of Energy. Gave copies to, I set up jurors for the Department of Justice. Mm-hmm. Offered our software to Ruth Davis at the National Library of Medicine, and they thanked us very much but never did anything with it.
Really, why didn't they want to go with it? Why would they later go then with SDC and develop an entirely different set of software, I assume?
Why government agencies compete with each other?
Hmm. Interesting.
They probably felt they could produce a better one than we could produce, and wanted to do the wrong thing.
Were you pretty happy with the Lockheed software and
Lockheed
the way that worked?
Worked fine.
Yeah,
worked fine for us. Well, it had the limitations that all that software had. It was built by ComputerNix for ComputerNix.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone that could, you know, it took somebody that knew something about the system, mm-hmm. in order to get the thing to work, and it was fine. But, you know, look, compared to what we had before, it was wonderful.
Yeah, and you could do Boolean searches.
You could do Boolean search. You could, no question. Absolutely,
yeah.
Right.
And how did your SDI system work on?
Right. But I tell you, SDI started going by the wayside when the guys could start running their own searches. Mm-hmm. When the centers, the librarian at the center could be Miss or Mr. Big by creating individual profiles and not telling them we can get these run on a central basis, mm-hmm. but essentially run them, give them a custom, customized, yeah. and it came from yeah. her, and that's fine.
Is that what you were discovering was happening at the facilities? The librarian was doing the searching?
Yeah, which is fine.
Yeah.
It's good practice. And it built the library up locally, so the library got support, which was budget support mm-hmm. from the other mm-hmm. program, from the program offices and what have you. Mm-hmm. So well, then it helped them locally. And that turned around and helped us.
Yeah. Who trained these folks?
They would train them locally.
You didn't send out your staff to train them at the facility.
No, we might do that once in a while, but we didn't. We would train the first group, and after that, it was up to the whoever we trained to, mm-hmm. to become the trainers mm-hmm. rather than a trainee.
Okay. Again, before we go to NLM, I've got a few more questions. Talk to me about the problems of working. Now you're firmly embedded in the NASA system. You've done the AEC stuff. Working with COSATI and working with the ASTIA folks and all of those in terms of standards, cooperation, the cataloging, the indexing, the abstracting, the language controls. How was that working out, particularly during this period of the 60s?
Well, in COSATI, we set up working groups to try to bring things closer together. We did cooperate on policy. We had problems developing standards, federal standards. The reason being that this would involve huge changes to each of the systems. Whoever was going to have to change.
Each system that had its own setup already.
Had its own setup uh-huh. already. And agencies, position agencies took is, yeah, we would like to do this, but we don't have the money to pay for the changes.
Hmm.
And so this is what you find among federal agencies. I mean, I'm not telling you something you don't already know.
Yeah, you
know.
Talk about competition.
Competition. And DOD said, well, we have special requirements because, you know, we handle classified stuff and there's security problems, so we have to have something special in ours. And, you know, this is what always happens. Somebody's always got something just a little bit different.
Yeah. I don't know why my little beeper is going off here. Let me change the tape okay. while...